From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, Chicago, we talk with the film's director and choreographer, Rob Marshall, about adapting the musical from stage to screen and how his vision compared to Bob Fosse's, who choreographed the original 1975 Broadway production. Marshall cast a couple of actors who weren't used to singing and dancing, Richard Gere and Renee Zellweger. We'll hear from Paul Bogave, who worked with them on their singing. He's the film's conductor and music supervisor. Chicago, coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Bush says he'll rethink food and energy aid to North Korea if it stops its nuclear weapons program. But Mr. Bush says he won't be blackmailed into negotiation. And as reporter Anthony Kuhn reports from Beijing, China would be willing to mediate.
China all along has been looking to play an active role in the international community's efforts to end the nuclear stalemate over North Korea's nuclear program. And it just may have found a way to do that, play a neutral role now. Today at a press conference by the foreign ministry, a foreign ministry spokesperson said that China would be willing to host talks between the U.S. and North Korea if the two sides, if Washington and Pyongyang, were willing.
Anthony Kuhn reporting. The UN Secretary General is urging North Korea to rein in its nuclear program. Kofi Annan also said today he has ordered a special advisor to assess North Korea's needs for foreign food aid. Meanwhile, as UN weapons inspectors search Iraq, they've told the UN Security Council they need a lot more time to complete a thorough assessment. And Secretary General Annan says now is not the time for a military attack.
I don't think from where I stand we are at that stage yet. The inspectors have a responsibility in Iraq. The council have asked them to pursue the disarmament program and report back. And then the council will make a determination.
But President Bush says he's sick and tired of Iraqi games and that time is running out on leader Saddam Hussein. GE workers are staging a two-day walkout, which began today. Rachel Gutbaum of member station WBUR has more.
Workers are striking at 48 plants across the country to protest increased health care costs. At the plant in Lynn, Massachusetts, GE's third largest, workers picketed in freezing weather. Steve LaFave has worked as a machinist for GE for almost 30 years.
GE forcing health care costs onto us, which they don't need to do. They more than make enough money that they don't need to force these health care increases on us.
Workers point out that General Electric made $14 billion last year, but in its defense, the company says employee health care costs have increased by 45% and need to be shared by the workers. For NPR News, I'm Rachel Gottbaum in Boston.
Up to 35,000 Kmart workers will lose their jobs. That's on top of the 22,000 positions the company slashed last year. Kmart announced today it was shutting down hundreds more stores throughout the country as it tries to emerge from bankruptcy protection. The discount chain says it expects to do so by April. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones closed up 56 points at 88.42, NASDAQ up 15 points at 14.61. This is NPR News. The head of WorldCom promises employees the telecom giant will climb out of its bankruptcy and accounting scandal. In a broadcast to WorldCom's 60,000 workers, CEO Michael Capellas described a 100-day plan to pull WorldCom out of bankruptcy. He says the company will file a reorganization plan by April 15th. Capellas also said WorldCom would move with a sense of urgency as the company is investigated for alleged accounting fraud. He says people will be fired as a result of the probe. A new study suggests it may be possible to determine in advance which women will benefit most from taking the drug tamoxifen to prevent breast cancer. NPR's Joe Palca has more.
A large study conducted during the 1990s showed that tamoxifen could lower the risk of breast cancer in women who were at high risk for the disease. But tamoxifen has some dangerous side effects, so some have questioned the value of giving it to healthy women who don't have breast cancer as a way to prevent the disease. The new study may change that. It reanalyzed data from a large study conducted in Italy of women who took tamoxifen to prevent breast cancer. By looking at factors such as a woman's height, the number of children she had, and the age she started having her period, the researchers found a subset of women most likely to benefit from tamoxifen. The results appear in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. Joe Palca, NPR News, Washington.
A police officer is dead in the latest anti-terrorism raid in Britain. Authorities say four other people were injured when they tried to detain someone suspected of having ties to terrorism. Today's raid was linked to a search in London last week that turned up traces of the deadly poison ricin. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from White Wave, the makers of Silk, a lactose-free organic soy milk available in the refrigerated section of supermarkets and natural food stores. Silk is soy.
Fresh Air, I'm Terry Gross. Today we're talking about Chicago, the movie adaptation of the Broadway musical. The soundtrack has just been released. Here's Catherine Zeta-Jones singing the opening number.
Come on, babe, why don't we paint the town? And all that jazz, I'm gonna rouge my knees and roll my stockings down. And all that jazz, start the car, I know a whoopee spot where the gin is cold but the piano's hot. It's just a noisy hall where there's a nightly brawl and all that jazz.
My guest, Rob Marshall, is the director and choreographer of Chicago. It's a musical he already knew well. He directed a theatrical revival of Chicago in Los Angeles. He choreographed and co-directed the Broadway revival of Cabaret, which, like Chicago, has songs by John Kander and Fred Ebb. Marshall also directed a revival of the Burt Bacharach musical Promises, Promises, starring Martin Short, and choreographed the Broadway revival of Damn Yankees. Chicago is set in the 20s during the Prohibition era. Renee Zellweger plays Roxy Hart, who dreams of singing and dancing her way out of poverty into stardom. She's cheating on her husband with a man who says he has contacts and can pull strings to get her booked into a nightclub. When she finds out he's lying, she shoots him. In prison, she meets Velma Kelly, a nightclub star who found her husband cheating on her with her sister, so she shot them both. Velma is played by Catherine Zeta-Jones. Richard Gere plays the slick lawyer who turns Roxy's case into a media circus. In the scene where Roxy first lands in jail, the women prisoners explain why they've killed their husbands and lovers in a song and dance called the Cell Block Tango. I asked Rob Marshall to compare his choreography for the Cell Block Tango with Bob Fosse's, who did the original 1975 Broadway production.
You know, on stage originally, Bob Fosse did it with these wonderful jail bars that they each had their own set of jail bars, and they would move around the stage in wonderful patterns and stomp the jail bars on the floor and so forth. And I wanted to try something completely different, so I came up with the idea of having them actually tango with their victims. And so I brought men into the piece, and so that they could sort of throw them around and be abusive to the men that had abused them. And so that whole idea, by bringing the men into it, led me down a completely different path. I could actually do a tango, and so I didn't feel like I had to follow in the footsteps of the original concept of the number. So I tried to, with each number, reconceive the number, so I, you know, didn't find myself, you know, having this ghost of Fosse over me.
Why don't we hear a little bit of the song He Had It Coming, in which the women who killed their husbands or lovers are explaining why they did it.
I met Ezekiel Young from Salt Lake City about 2 years ago, and he told me he was single, and we hit it off right away. So we started living together. He'd go to work, he'd come home, I'd fix him a drink, we'd have dinner. And then I found out. Single, he told me. Single my ass. Not only was he married. Oh, no. He had six wives. One of those Mormons, you know. So that night when he came home from work, I fixed him his drink, as usual. You know, some guys just can't hold their arsenic.
He had it coming, six. He had it coming, six.
Now I'm standing in the kitchen, carving up the chicken for dinner, minding my own business. In storms my husband Wilbur.
That's the Cell Block Tango, He Had It Coming. From Chicago, my guest is the director and choreographer of the new film adaptation, Rob Marshall. Your choreography for this sequence is very, it's a tango, and there's something very, almost sadomasochistic about the way it's choreographed, and also in the way that everybody is dressed. How intentional is that? I mean, what kind of look are you going for there?
Well, I had this incredible costume designer, Colleen Atwood, who had a real, amazing skills as a designer. Has done most of the Tim Burton films and has a wild imagination and such taste. And, obviously she had to, design in two different worlds. One was our vaudeville world, one was our real world. And the vaudeville world, there's a great deal of flexibility there and range because it takes place in her mind. So, I remember for that specific number, Colleen found this beautiful 1920s portrait of this woman who was in these sort of strappy kind of I don't even know what you call it, sort of like a leotard type thing, but it was really risque. I mean, the clothes then were really unbelievably risque. The women, rarely wore bras. It was short skirts. It was really a sort of a female empowerment time. And, she found this great strappy kind of thing. And I think that was sort of became that actual photograph from the early 20s became sort of our idea for this number. And, it's a very aggressive number. It's violent in a way but still satirical, I think, too.
Yeah, let me be more blunt about the costumes. I mean, the women are wearing these like black leather straps, basically,
Right.
with dark and stockings and I think black heeled boots, maybe.
Yep, some have boots on. Yep, it was a lot of straps. Honestly, that came from actual pictures of the period. But yes, absolutely, it has a little bit of that sadomasochism there, but sexy too, I think.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sexy, the opening number, All That Jazz, in which Catherine Zeta-Jones is the main dancer and singer, she too is wearing a lot of flimsy and revealing black leather. How do you make dance really sexy look? What kind of movements to you? What style of movement says sex to you?
Well, let me say, it's funny. I don't even think in terms of sex. I think all movement is very sexual, in a way, because you're moving your body in ways that you don't normally do. And so, I think this particular number, one of the sort of conceptual ideas behind it was I had men and women on stage, and I really thought of it sort of as. And I hate to say this word, but sort of like, because I just met you, Terry, it's sort of like an orgy, the idea is that everybody on stage is sort of moving through other people. And it was like a club within a club. In other words, you're in this club and it's sort of spilling out over this on the stage into the club. And so I created this little club on stage where these men and women were moving through each other and around each other and feeling each other. And it's all about sort of being free and loose I take a lot of my inspiration from the brilliant Fred Ebb lyrics. I mean, you hear those lyrics, when you're saying, find a flask, we're playing fast and loose, and that you can just start choreographing that just by hearing those great words. So that helped me into the material.
What do you think is the difference between what Bob Fosse found really sexy or sensual as a choreographer and what you do?
Well, it's always hard to just sort of dissect styles. I think Bob had a very specific style that came from his physicality. I mean, he smoked, and so cigarettes were always in his numbers. He had sort of a hunched over shoulders, and so, there was always a sort of a hunch sensibility to his work. He loved I think he was very much influenced by Fred Astaire and Balanchine and Jack Cole. So a lot of his stuff was very detailed, small movements, a lot of isolation. I think if I had
by isolation, you mean like one shoulder moves or one hip moves?
Right, exactly. One finger moves.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that my style is probably more abandoned than that, more character-driven than that. I don't force my style, one specific style, you know, on people. I try to work from what they have, and I also try to tell the story. So that's where my work, that's what inspires me.
My guest is Rob Marshall, the director and choreographer of Chicago. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Rob Marshall. He directed and choreographed the new film adaptation of the Broadway musical Chicago. Let's talk about the casting. Catherine Zeta-Jones is a star. She plays Velma. And I didn't know until Chicago that she had a background in musical theater when she was in London. And she started in a West End production of 42nd Street. I guess everybody knows that now, but very few people knew that until Chicago. How did you know that she had the gifts to do this? She's really terrific in the film.
Well, Marty Richards, who's our producer, had told me that Catherine had a voice and had danced. He was a friend of theirs, theirs meaning Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones, and had heard her sing at a Christmas party. You know, it's so funny, because musicals aren't done these days, you find yourself really doing detective work, you know, trying to figure out, oh, I heard somebody did this, or I heard in their background they did this. Anyway, so Marty sort of let me know that she had done that, you know, had sung and sounded great, and he had also told me that she had starred in 42nd Street in the West End. And then I found out, you know, that as a kid she had been in Annie in the West End and Bugsy Malone, and then started doing chorus work and Pajama Game and things like that. And then I actually saw a tape of her on the Olivier Awards doing Kurt Vile's Street Scene, and she did a big jitterbug number called Moonface and Starry-Eyed, where she sang and danced, and that was great because, you know, I saw everything in that dance number that I needed to see. I mean, she was tapping and turning and kicking and being lifted, and she also sang so with such a great voice. It was sort of like, wow, I didn't realize, you know, she had those gifts, and So it was sort of all the combination of all those things that sort of let me know that she was the real deal.
I feel like thanking you for casting somebody in the lead who has a little bit of flesh on her bone. She has a beautiful figure, but she doesn't look like a skeleton, and so many dancers really, really do. And I think that really works because she has to look pretty tough and kind of threatening, and she's able to pull that off.
I really love weight. You know, I love weight on. I love real people. I like real people dancing. I thought she looked like a real woman, and I love the dynamic between that and Roxy. Roxy is this waifish wannabe, and so the dynamic between the two was so important. I really did not want to cast the same person twice.
Mm-hmm,
you know, I didn't
mm-hmm.
want the same gal twice. I really wanted distinctly different people playing these roles.
Now, you cast Richard Gere in the male lead, Renee Zellweger in one of the female leads. They don't really have song and dance backgrounds. Did you try to find people who really had a background in song and dance as well as acting?
With Billy Flynn, with Richard Gere's role, you know, he does have a major song and dance background. It's just nobody knew about it. You know, he played Danny Zuko in Grease in the West End. That was one of his first big jobs. And then he had done a series of rock musicals before he went into film. But nobody knows that because musicals aren't done anymore. So, you know, if we were living in the 40s or 50s, he would have done, you know, six or seven musicals by now. But nobody knew of those skills. And you know, it's something that just rolled right off of him. I mean, he has this amazing ability to, you know, I don't know if you know, he plays the guitar, he plays the piano, he plays the cornet, he sings every day. This is a very musical person. It's something that he loves but had never had the chance to do since he was a kid, you know. So, and I had been, you know, 25 years or something since he had done it. So he was loving rediscovering it again. And but it was, and he worked so hard. I mean, the one thing he was not was a tap dancer, and that took. I mean, I've never seen anybody work so hard in my life. I mean, he literally would go into a room and curse and swear and go through like wet T-shirt after wet T-shirt of sweat until, you know, he got, I mean, I think he worked for 3 months to get where he needed to be for this tap dance because he'd never done that before. And, you know, tap's all about rhythm, and he's a real musician, so that part was great. It was just sort of like training your brain to your feet. And then in terms of Roxy, I mean, Renee, that was the trickiest part to cast. I saw maybe over a dozen major film actresses for that role because I didn't know. I didn't know who had the skills. And because, like I say, they're just not done anymore musicals. So we started the quote-unquote Scarlett O'Hara search for Roxy. And, you know, I've worked with many people that, you know, actors that are new to musicals, Natasha Richardson and Cabaret on Stage. Alan Cumming was new to musicals. Kathy Bates, when I did Annie, you know, I put Whoopi Goldberg into a form, Funny Thing Happened Away, the form that was new for her. I love working with people who are new to musicals. It's fun for me to work from that place, from character. And, with Renee, it was, she walked in and we started working, and I literally knew within like 10 seconds that she could do it because I saw her dance line. I saw her athletic ability immediately. I saw her sense of style and how she could bring the character to life through movement and through her voice. And it was, you know, it was like, hallelujah. Because I thought now I have a movie.
In a lot of musicals from the 50s and 60s, the singing was actually dubbed. You know, even in West Side Story, you know, Natalie Wood is dubbed in most of her songs.
Yes, by Marnie Nixon.
Yeah. So did anyone suggest to you the horrible possibility of dubbing your leading actors?
You know what? I think because I come from the theater, they know that I would have spun around and said, no way, because I don't want to do, you know, it's funny. You see My Fair Lady now, which is such a beautiful, beautiful movie, and Marnie Nixon sounds great, but every time I hear Audrey Hepburn open her mouth to sing and Marnie Nixon comes out, it just pulls you out of the story. It's just, it bothers me. So I really didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that ever. And it's funny, a lot of people after it had been seeing them, you know, the beginning sort of, you know, test screenings of the movie were saying, well, obviously that's not Richard Gere tap dancing. And I was like, yes, it is. It's every single,
is
Richard.
At the very end of the credits, there's a credit that says that Catherine Zeta-Jones, Renee Zellweger, and Richard Gere did their own singing and dancing.
Yes.
So everybody on the film must have felt that it was necessary to actually go on the record at the end of the film and say that.
Well, we did it with sort of a little bit of a sense of humor about it because, you know, we were just saying, how can we let people know that these people who work so hard to sing and dance, and, you know, we went through a 6 weeks of rehearsal where it was like theatrical boot camp. And, you know, I just wanted I wanted to make sure that they had their due, you know. And so we thought, well, you know what, we'll put that at the end of the movie just so people know it's the truth, but also with a little bit of sense of humor about it, you know.
Now, Chicago was not edited like a Fred Astaire musical. In a Fred Astaire musical, the camera pulled back and you saw Astaire and Rogers dance. Maybe there were a couple of edits, but basically you saw them dance or sort of the whole bodies as they were dancing. And everything stops while they dance. In Chicago, the dance numbers are very highly edited. And I'd like you to describe your approach to editing it, the thinking behind it, the rhythm of it. I sometimes find that kind of fast-paced editing in a production number really frustrating because you feel like you don't get to see what anybody's doing. By the time they're finished with a movement, you're already cutting to the next movement. And you don't really get the pleasure of watching somebody dance. I didn't feel that frustration with the way you edited it.
Well, you know, it's a balance. It's with this piece, actually, I felt that the language of our concept took us there because the only way to tell the story was to be moving back and forth between these two worlds. And so that energy and that language, which you set up right from the very beginning as you're telling many different stories at once, sort of lent us to the style of how to edit it. People have asked me, did you edit this because, you know, it's the MTV generation and you can't sit on something for that short? And it's like, no. I served this particular piece, which was being told very specifically in two different worlds. And that's why that rhythm, you know, it's interesting. If you set up that rhythm, if you then depart from that rhythm, it seems odd and dishonest. And I experiment with lots of things. I mean, truthfully, I could have sat on these numbers and just done a master and they would have been beautiful because, you know, I come from stage, so I know how to do that. You know, I don't have to be afraid that it's going to sort of just sit there and look, you know, kind of dull, because I can keep a stage moving because those are my roots, you know. And where you can't edit on stage, you just have to sort of let it sit there in the master. But it was very intentional, the editing that I did, because I wanted to keep the language and the energy of the piece consistent. And because we had created this idea that we'd be moving back and forth between these two worlds while still telling one linear story, then that became how to serve this piece. And that's why I chose to sort of edit it that way.
Rob Marshall directed and choreographed the new film Chicago. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. From the new soundtrack of Chicago, this is Richard Gere.
Give them the old hocus pocus, bead and feather 'em. How can they see with sequins in their eyes? What if your hinges all are rusting? What if, in fact, you're just disgusting? Razzle dazzle them, and they'll never catch wise. Vociferous, give them the old flim flam flummox.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. Information available at Barnes & Noble stores and on the web at www.bn.com. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, by Find Law, offering an online directory of more than 1 million attorneys, plus consumer and business legal guides, providing a place to find answers, find lawyers, find law, findlaw.com. And from Bantam Books, a division of Random House, publisher of Destructive Emotions, How Can We Overcome Them?, a scientific dialogue with the Dalai Lama, narrated by Daniel Goleman. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, helping actors learn to sing, we talk with Paul Bogave, the music supervisor and conductor for the film Chicago, about working with Richard Gere and Renee Zellweger. And we continue our conversation with Rob Marshall, the director and choreographer of Chicago.
5, 6, 7, 8. We'll be right back.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Rob Marshall, the choreographer and director of Chicago, the new film adaptation of the Broadway musical. It was first produced on Broadway in 1975 with choreography by Bob Fosse. One of the film's stars, Catherine Zeta-Jones, had performed in musicals in England before coming to America. But two of the stars, Renee Zellweger and Richard Gere, were not used to singing. In Chicago, you work with some performers who are used to acting but not that used to singing. And
right.
I think when an actor is really good, that they can convince you that they're a great singer, even if they're not, because they so look the part and they act out the lyrics so well. And I'll give you an example. I mean, like, I like Marlene Dietrich singing, but when she, but when she's performing in a movie, she's so spellbinding because she so inhabits that kind of sexual persona that you almost you're just so convinced of the personality of this song. You know that.
Yes. Yes.
So would you just talk a little bit about working with non-singers who act? And what you can get from them in a singing role.
Such a great question, Terry. I mean, you know, when you think about some of our greatest musical theater performances, you know, you think of Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady, or you think of Yul Brynner in King and I, and you think of Lauren Bacall in Applause, and I can go on and on and on. These aren't major singers. You know, they're not going to have an album out of just them singing, you know. I think you have to, I mean, it's my philosophy, and I just feel you have to cast the part first, the character, that's the most important thing. And of course they're going to have to be able to sing. I mean, that's how but if you do it the other way, you just cast the singer and you don't have the actor, you have a hollow production. I've seen it so many times. In fact, in the 80s, with the sort of influx of the sung through musicals, you know, you see a musical and everybody has great voices, but there's not a personality on stage. There's not a person up there. There's not a person with color. It's all kind of just very whitewashed. And it's very pretty and it sounds lovely, but you're not moved in any way, shape, or form. I like the rough edges, you know. I like hearing a person sing. Now, I don't necessarily like hearing a person sing badly. And it's really great when they can be a great actor and can sing, and you know, as well. But I have to say that I think the most important thing is that the person inhabits the character. Because I'm moved in a song not because somebody hits a high note, but I'm moved in a song because something emotional is happening to that character, and they're expressing it through song. Now, so that's sort of how I feel.
One of the performers in Chicago is Queen Latifah, who is an actress who's also known for her rap recordings.
Yes.
She sings, and she sings really well in Chicago. She also sang in the movie Living Out Loud, in which she played a lounge singer.
Yeah.
Would you talk about directing her in her big number, which is called When You're Good to Mama?
Well, it's interesting. She
I should say she plays the prison warden in the women's prison, and
yes.
And she cuts deals with everybody.
Yes.
And the understanding is some deals are for money, probably some of the deals are for sexual favors.
Yes, exactly. That's sort of the intention. You know, she is a performer. You know, she's a fabulous lady to work with, and she comes from rap and not necessarily sort of musical theater, but she certainly understands performance from her days as a rapper. And she has, it's so funny, she just has this naturally big Broadway voice. But you know, it was so funny as we started working on it, I thought, wow, this is you know, where has this great talent been? This wonderful talent. She's our Pearl Bailey, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see her get up there and do a Broadway musical, because she's just, it's just in her blood. And it was funny, the day we were shooting it, I completely, the morning of, completely reblocked her song, which she wasn't too thrilled with. But I knew I had made a mistake. You know, the most important thing for me was that I was really serving these people and making them as great as they could be. And I had left her on stage for the whole number. And I thought, you know, this is the Sophie Tucker number. And this is, you know, Latifah's so great with interacting with people. You know, she had her own talk show and so forth and so on. I should get her into the audience during the number. So the morning of, I reblocked it and put her in the audience for most of the number. And I felt that intimacy with the audience was something that would give her, I don't know.
This is a very double entendre kind of song. So doing the double entendre with the people appreciating it works.
Yes, closer to them. So she could, So she could get right into their face and be funny right there. You know, right. I felt Sophie Tucker would have done that. She would have gone out in the audience and been kind of, you know, brass and kind of, you know, kind of sexy and funny with the way. So I thought, you know, change it, Rob. Do it now. And she was great.
Rob Marshall directed and choreographed the new film Chicago. From the new soundtrack, here's Queen Latifah singing When You're Good to Mama.
If you want my gravy, pepper my ragu, spice it up for mama, she'll get hot for you. When they pass that basket, folks contribute too. You put in for mama, she'll put out for you. The folks atop the ladder are the ones the world adores. So boost me up my ladder, kitty, and I'll boost you up yours. Let's all stroke together like the Princeton crew. When you're stroking mama, mama's stroking you. So what's the one conclusion I could bring this number two? When you're good to mama,
coming up, we talk with the music supervisor of Chicago, Paul Bogave, about working with Renee Zellweger and Richard Gere on their singing. This is Fresh Air. As Rob Marshall just explained, he gave a couple of the leading roles in the musical Chicago to actors who weren't singers. My guest, Paul Bogave, is the film's conductor and music supervisor. He helped Renee Zellweger and Richard Gere find and develop their singing voices for the film. Bogave has also been the music director of the Broadway productions of Aida, Sunset Boulevard, Aspects of Love, and Starlight Express. He previously worked with Rob Marshall on the TV adaptation of Annie, starring Alan Cumming and Kathy Bates. There's another credit that's not on Bogave's resume, but that I should mention in the interest of full disclosure. He is the brother of Barbara Bogave, who often guest hosts Fresh Air. Before we talk about Paul Bogave's vocal work with the Stars of Chicago, here's Renee Zellweger singing Funny Honey.
Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong, but he doesn't care. Funny honey of mine. Sometimes I'm down, sometimes I'm up, but he follows round like some droopy eye pup. He loves me so, that funny honey of mine.
I asked Chicago's music supervisor, Paul Bogave, about how he approached working with Renee Zellweger on her singing.
Well, the first thing that I do is, you know, they come into my studio, which is in the place where we film, and it's a big room with a piano and some music stands. And I also have some chairs away from the music place, away from the piano, and a sofa. And they're all prepared to start, you know, oh, God, he's going to make me start singing notes or scales. And I take them over to the, you know, to the sofa. We sit down and we talk for half an hour or a little longer. The reason I do that is everybody comes to the table, as it were, with a different background in music. And I talked to Renee and I said, you know, like, what do you listen to? Where are you from first? And I found out she was from Texas, which helped greatly because the character Roxy Hart is a transplanted Texas resident who's moved to Chicago. So she already has that, you know, regionalism that we could use. And Renee has a slight Southern accent. And I asked her, you know, I said, what do you listen to? And she talked about blues and country. She was totally unversed with this music, the music of the 20s, but totally eager to immerse herself in it. Renee has a great musicality. She just had never used her voice. And what happened in the course of 6 weeks is I think she went from a range of, comfortable range of four notes to about almost a two-octave range, which is 16 notes. And it was a great, great surprise.
So how did you work with Renee Zellweger on increasing her range?
Well, I found a great voice teacher in Toronto named Elaine Overholt. And she was in quite a few of the sessions with me. And we worked technically on certain exercises away from the songs. And then I would take the tune of the song and have Renee sing the tune of the song on a vowel or a me. That's the song Funny Honey. And she would just get used to making tones like that. I also had her speaking quite high in her range. At some times, there's a point at the end of the song which is high belt and it's extremely angry. And in order to get those high notes like that, I had her increase her voice like that. And she started, she did it as an actress. I do this all the time with people because I always want that extension from speaking into singing so it doesn't sound like something separate.
Well, that leads me to something I always wonder about. What do you think is the connection between speaking and singing? Where is it connected and where is it different?
Well, your speaking range can be quite like your singing range. We all have the possibility of a great amount of notes. Most people, and most people in America, and I listen to myself, and I include myself in this, speak in a very limited amount of notes. I'll give you a good example. If you've ever seen Rex Harrison in the movie My Fair Lady, there's one point where he has a line that's a loud Wagnerian mother and a voice that shatters glass. Well, he hits a note, a pitch, because in his speaking voice that is so high, it's technically a high B flat. That's like Pavarotti. If you had asked him to sing that note, he could never do it, but he actually got emotionally there with his voice. And that's where you can get it. It begins with speaking. I think of singing as heightened speech. I don't think of it as something separate. And when I see a movie musical, I loathe that problem that a lot of people have with musicals where they're talking. All of a sudden the singing starts and you feel a jolt that something is different. And you shouldn't feel that. You should feel it as just another form of expression.
Now let's look at Richard Gere. What did you think were his strengths and weaknesses?
Richard Gere and I have a lot in common because we're both rock and rollers. He's a great musician, by the way. He plays fantastic guitar. I think he toured with Van Morrison a few years ago, in addition to piano and cornet. But he said, look, I haven't sung in a long time and I sing up here like that. And he's scrunching his face and pulling his neck up and doing everything wrong for this kind of singing, which is, you know, open-throated and full. So we had to work very much on loosening him up, loosening his jaw and shoulders, and you know, but not losing that raspy quality that he brought to the table that comes from his rock background. I didn't want him trying to imitate some Broadway singer.
Let's hear Richard Gere singing from the soundtrack recording of Chicago.
I don't care about expensive things. Cashmere coats, diamond rings don't mean a thing. All I care
about is love. That's what I'm here for. I don't care for wearing silk cravats, ruby studs, satin spats. Don't mean a thing. All I care about is love. Give me two eyes of blue, softly saying, let me see her standing there. And honest mister, I'm a millionaire. I don't care for any fine attire Vanderbilt might admire. No, no, not me. All I care about is love.
That's Richard Gere singing from the soundtrack recording of Chicago. My guest, Paul Bogave, supervised and conducted the music for the film. Paul, what are some of the exercises that you gave Richard Gere to help him develop the singing voice he needed for this role?
One of the exercises is actually a rock and roll exercise, and it's I call it the Tina Turner scrunch. Now, I know this is radio, and it would help if I could show you this, but let me describe it. She does something naturally. Tina Turner, she uses her lower body. She scrunches her nose up, technically, and she gets these incredible high notes that are don't hurt her, go right over her vocal cords, and uses her entire body and her face. And I used that with almost everybody. I used it with Catherine for her high notes, which she did not come with, and for Richard to open up. And I did a lot of exercises with him that he would have where he would loosen his jaw, and he would hum through the song. He would do ma 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 ma, that through all the notes instead of just going to the words. Also, the other thing that I should tell you is I had him speak and act the words as I played the piano. That's a separate thing, and it's the reason I have them do that is I want them to be able to act the songs like as if they were monologues, as if they were not, as if there were no music there. I don't want them to have to depend on the notes to carry the acting. I want to make sure that they really, really understand the lyrics the way they understand their lines in the film.
So what were some of the exercises that you gave the non-singers in Chicago to help them reach those high notes they needed?
Well, the first thing I would start with is to get their speaking voice up to the height and emotion that these high notes carry. And a lot of it has to do with generating the excitement. That's why you sing high notes. I mean, it should not just be singing a pretty loud note. There's always some kind of great excitement. Now, at the end of All I Care About Is Love, Richard's first big song, the last statement is the height of the excitement, the climax of the song. So I would have him take a speaking voice like this. All I care about is love. All I care about is love. And he would extend his speaking voice, not try to sing, just get that feeling and get that feeling in his body of where that goes, where it goes, where it settles in your sinuses, in your face. And the next thing we would do would totally be go away from that and take the note. Dee, 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 on a D, or a ya, 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 ya. And he keeps singing that and then put the two together. But that was the first technical thing. It also involved relaxing his shoulders, pulling his jaw down, relaxing every muscle in his body except his legs, which you use as a strong bass. And the other thing is, all Rob Marshall's choreography is very low-based. It's not tight. It's not like the Fosse style. It's very based. It's based low in your body. So I had a great, it was perfect. I had the great, you know, it was a great ally for me, the style of dancing, because I could use it in helping people sing.
My guest is Paul Bogave, the conductor and music supervisor of the film Chicago. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Paul Bogave, is the conductor and music supervisor of the film Chicago. He worked with the actors on their singing. Now, women's voices tend to be a little different than men's in the sense that women's voices, you have the head voice and the chest voice.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And the difficulty of negotiating the passage in between them. Men's voices tend to, I think, just be more chesty unless you're singing falsetto. Smokey Robinson or something.
right, exactly, yeah.
So is there a different technique you use for women than you do for men?
I don't. In the high notes, there's a thing called a mix, which you just talked about in a way, that you try and negotiate the head voice and the chest voice together. For example, in All That Jazz, the end of All That Jazz, no, I'm no one's wife, but oh, I love my life and all that jazz. That's very high. That note, jazz. Catherine came to me with a great big belt voice that stopped, I'd say, about a third lower. That's three notes lower than that note, jazz. And the first thing I said to her, by the way, was, did you listen to Shirley Bassey? I know she's Welsh. She said, did I listen? I was like, you know, winning contests, imitating her. So she came with that kind of big belt style. What I did with her was I used the 20s sound, which is very very nasal. And they spoke like that, I think, because they didn't have microphones and they had to project through their nasal passages. What I did with her is we did a lot of notes up there, speaking up there, all that jazz. She would get that in her head voice, make it nasal. And all of a sudden, she reared back one day, and she just belted the whole thing, as you hear but now in the soundtrack and when you see the movie.
I think most musicals are done with the songs pre-recorded, and then then you lip-sync to it, particularly if it's a dance number. You're not singing and dancing at the same time.
No. In fact, you are, from the beginning of time, I think, it's always been... you pre-record because of the sound quality in a studio versus the sound quality on a set, which is quite poor for singing. And this has been done for years. And the trick to this, the real trick is in the preparation, as we did. I prepared the singers knowing what the shots were going to look like, mm-hmm. knowing how they were going to be staged, how they were going to breathe. For example, Renee, I think, sings a song... My Funny Honey, she's draped all over the piano. There's one point where she arches her back and sings a note. And I wanted that feeling. I wanted them aware of what it was going to look like. So when you saw them and heard these pre-records coming out of their mouths, they had a relationship to the picture. And then the hard thing about lip singing is you do not just move your lips. You really sing. You sing on the set and you breathe, or else it looks completely fake.
Do the actors like to work hard at singing?
Well,
you know, I mean, like, are they into it?
Yeah. Yes, I'm laughing about it. Well, yeah. Do you like going to the gym all the time? That's my criteria about it. I'm laughing because there was one day when Renee Zellweger came in, and you know, she's a genius. She's a genius, and I think she's a perfectionist, and she can be very hard on herself. And she, you know, she came with the least background of singing, and of course, in the course, improved the most of anybody. But she was frustrated. She was just like, I'm sick of this. I don't want to do these exercises. I've had it. It's not getting any better. And I thought, okay, I got to feel like what she's feeling. And I said, you know what? Sounds like when I go to the gym, I hate it. I hate every second of it. I hate it. It's so boring. She said, oh, I love it. I can go for 2 hours. I said, well, I'll make you a deal. If I sit here on the floor and do sit-ups, will you do these exercises? And she did. It was great, you know? So the answer to the question is, yes, some people get really frustrated and tired. But they, as she did, she slogged through, and she had a great breakthrough after that.
Have your experiences working with actors who have to learn how to really sing for musicals, have those experiences made you believe that anyone can sing, or is it only made you believe that certain people can,
no.
can sing?
No. I will unfortunately say that there are limits, and the limits are if you plunk a note out and somebody hits another note and they're kind of what's known as tone deaf, that you just better not bark up that tree. You've got to be, when you say non-singer, let's say a beginning singer. That's different. That's somebody who has basic pitch and rhythm. And then you've got something to work with, and you cannot draw blood from a stone.
Well, Paul Bogave, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Paul Bogave is the conductor and music supervisor of the film Chicago. The soundtrack has just been released. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Slick your hair and wear your buckle shoes. And all that jazz, I hear that Father Dip is gonna blow the blues. And all that jazz. Shake up heart and want a brand new start to do that.
Tapes and transcripts of Fresh Air are available at 1-877-213-7374 or on the internet at www.burrells.com. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by Bantam Trade Paperbacks, a division of Random House, publisher of The Wisdom of Menopause, Creating Physical and Emotional Health and Healing During the Change by Dr. Christiane Northrup. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we discuss the president's tax cut plan, including the tax break on stock dividends, with Floyd Norris, chief financial correspondent for The New York Times. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.